Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, August 17th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Rhonda Lynn Asherman, Mary Ellen Beauvais, Laura Joan Blank, Leroy Wayne Calborn, Floyd Dennis Callahan, Eduardo Yuboko de Ocampo, Patricia Ann Lauer DeBusk, Lewis Booth Edwards, Virginia Haley, Carolyn Mawson Harrow, Ann Hayes, Barbara Pine Herrick, Anne Marie Hodges, Loretta A. Lavis, Patricia Marion McCutcheon, Corrine Pavich, Mark Quayle, Brooke Marie Roselle, Dale E. Saxton, Milton Schroeder, Walter John Stanton Jr., Francis Merldine Varner, Lois Maureen Larson Williams, and Carlos Eduardo Zaldo. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the people listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the section of the paper called the Economy section. There's one article in it today. It was written by Russ Wiles, who is a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, Study Finds One Simple Tip Boost Investing Results, and that is, keep cost down. If there's one simple investment maxim that will improve your odds of success in any market climate, it is this: keep your cost down. This can be especially important with mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, as researcher Morningstar affirmed in a newly released study. The company found that funds of either type that buy and hold pre-selected baskets of stocks or bonds as grouped in indexes, they usually beat those managed by professionals who are trying to pick the winners. But the main reason is, index funds are cheaper to run, with the cost savings passed on to investors. Index funds are those that hold groupings of stocks, such as the 500 companies in the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. Now, there are many other indexes, including those focused on bonds, foreign stocks, and real estate companies. This isn't a new finding, though. Research by Morningstar and others has supported the idea that passive index funds are a good way to invest. Morningstar describes these funds as passive because there is no ongoing effort to tweak or alter their portfolios, as opposed to the active funds that are run by managers who try to pick future outperformers and make other adjustments. The study analyzed the performance of more than 9,000 funds. Now, you might think that active managers could better react to economic and other developments, but that doesn't seem to improve their results. Brian Armour, a Morningstar director who co-authored this study, said, quote, "Elections, executive orders, tariffs, geopolitical risk made for a roller coaster ride during the 12 months coming up through June of 2025. Conventional wisdom says active managers should better manage those complexities, but the performance says otherwise." The study offers insights on how you should invest your money. For example, if you participate in an employer-sponsored 401k program, you probably have a choice of at least a dozen funds in which to invest, and possibly other options like shares of individual stocks. Placing index funds at the center of your portfolio can be wise, especially if you're investing for the long haul. Roughly 44% of Arizonans have access to a 401k or other retirement programs through work, and 31% invest in mutual funds or stocks, bonds, or other securities on their own. Now, that's according to a separate study by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. Those figures compare with 52% of Americans overall having workplace retirement plans and 34% investing through outside accounts. Now, Morningstar found that just 33% of actively run mutual funds and exchange-traded funds beat similar types of passive index funds over the 12 months coming up through June 2025, and it survived through that period. That is down from 47% over the prior year. It marks one of the largest drops since Morningstar has been conducting this research. Some funds fold from time to time, which is why Morningstar tracked only the ones that survived over the full 12 months. Now, exchange-traded funds are similar to mutual funds, except that investors can buy and sell them at different prices throughout the day. Mutual funds, by contrast, typically are priced just at the close of the market's daily trading session. Yes, Morningstar found that the difference was even more pronounced on the bond side, with only 31% of actively managed fixed income funds beating their passive index rivals over the 12 months through June. So what explains those discrepancies? Well, in part, even professionals can make blunders when trying to pick stocks or bonds, such as by purchasing at inflated prices, or selling too low, or investing in bad companies. But even more than this, cost matters. Performance results for mutual funds and exchange-traded funds are reported after expenses have been deducted. As noted, passive index portfolios typically are cheaper to run than those on the active side. Only 15% of the most costly active funds outperformed their passive index rivals, according to Morningstar. Morningstar tallied average investor-borne expenses for active funds at 0.59% a year. That's equivalent to about $59 for a $10,000 investment. But you compare that with 0.11% or $11 for passive index funds. Well, it doesn't sound like much, but it explains much of, not most, of the performance gap. So do the same results apply over periods longer than just 12 months? Yes, they sure do. They often are even more pronounced over longer periods. For example, just 21% of active funds beat their passive index peers over the 10 years between coming up on June 2025. So are there investment areas where active managers fare better? Active managers of funds that buy international stocks did better over the 12 months ending in June. 52% beat their passive index rivals. Bond and retail estate funds also typically are competitive with indexing. So what conclusions might I draw from this? Well, one suggestion is, it can be wise to incorporate passive index funds and lower-cost investments generally into your portfolio. Also, the study should make you skeptical of active funds or stock pickers touting exceptional short-term performance. Anyone can get a hot hand. The question is whether the momentum will last. Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab, and iShares are among the many groups that offer index funds, including Morningstar's favorites that are listed on their website. And that was Russ Weil's article entitled "Study Finds One Simple Tip Boost Investing Results: Keep Cost Down." We're coming up on 10 minutes past the hour. We're going to leave the economy section now and move on over to the sports page. From the front page of the sports section, the cover story is all about Arizona high school football. The title is 25 Season Brings Major Change to Playoff Format. This article was written by Richard Obert for the Arizona Republic. Welcome to the 2025 Arizona high school football season. It is a season that will feature teams with new coaches, players who have transferred to new schools, and new playoff formats in just about every Arizona Interscholastic Association conference. The playoff changes will mean more teams with more opportunities, but the changes are already drawing mixed reactions. The 2025 high school season begins August 21st for small schools in the AIA's 1A through 3A conferences, and on August 28th for the big schools in the AIA 4A through 6A conferences. This year, 20 of the 29 6A teams will qualify for the postseason, with two brackets, one for the top-tier open division playoffs and another for 6A. No longer will 5A teams compete in the open. The 12-team open bracket will begin play with an opening round. The top four teams, based on AIA rankings, will be given a bye. The four teams that lose in the opening round games will fall back into a 6A quarterfinal playoff bracket. Eight other lower-seeded 6A teams will play a first-round 6A playoff game, with those winners advancing to quarterfinal games with the open teams that fall back into the 6A. The four losing teams in the 6A opening round will be eliminated. Now, the change is similar to AIA basketball, where early round open division teams that lose fall back into their conference tournaments with a chance to still win a title. Now, some football coaches like it, feeling like in basketball it's good to have a team give a team a second chance after falling out of the open early. But others feel the 6A bracket becomes a consolation prize to the open, a second playoff life that seldom is given in football. Surprise Shadow Mountain second-year coach Mike Zadevsky, who led Chandler Hamilton the open final in 2020, well, Mike said, "I like the old way. If you win, you're in. And if you lose, see you later." I don't know. Are you making too many people happy? You make a tournament, you play in the tournament. In college basketball, you have the NIT and the NCAA. You don't get to lose in the first round of the NCAA and drop down to the NIT. The Open is everything, and it's one of the best tournaments in the country. And it's great they put that together. The Open is special, unquote. So when the AIA started the 8-team Open Division playoff in 2019, it comprised the top teams from the 6A, 5A, and 4A conference based on the AIA's computer-generated rankings. Last year, the AIA granted a request from 4A schools to be removed from open consideration, and this year, the 5A schools will be removed. Well, it's starting to feel like 2015, when the AIA formed a 17-team Division I with schools fighting to stay out of it because of the top-level competition. A one-win team could make the 16-team playoffs. That year, Peoria Centennial was bumped up a division and ended up shocking everybody by running through the East Valley heavyweights like Hamilton and Phoenix Mountain Point and Mesa Desert Ridge on their way to the title. Well, it was great drama, but the coaches complained about how banged up their teams were every Friday in what they called the Gauntlet Division. So the AIA now moves teams up or down a conference board on merit every 2 years. This year, only 29 teams are in 6A. And that's even after Scottsdale-Saguaro and Tucson-Salpointe Catholic and Shadow Ridge and Surprise Valley Vista all lost their appeals to move down a level. Gilbert Highland coach Brock Farrell, whose team won back-to-back 6A titles during the open era, well, Coach Brock said, quote, "I really like the new 6A playoff format. It still gives the top four teams a bye week that they earned through their successful 6A regular season. I like that 5 to 12 play each other to get into the open, settle it on the field instead of a computer formula. I also like that if you lost the first round of the play-in as a 5 to 12 open seed, your season's not over, but you get moved to the 6A playoffs, unquote. Now, Tommy Eubanks, Mesa Public Schools Athletic Director, helped with the creation of the new open 6A playoff format. He said it was a statewide effort, with surveys going out to schools asking athletic directors and coaches for their input on how to keep the open division playoffs after the 5A schools asked to be removed from the open. Last year, four 6A teams were in the open. After one round, the semifinals became matchups of four 6A teams, and Peoria Liberty ended up beating Chandler Basha for its second straight state title. Eubanks said that, quote, the Basketball Coaches Association kind of nailed the open, in my opinion. Everyone was trying to find out how to have a bounce-back game after having such a great season, unquote. Well, in the last 3 years, the AIA followed the basketball coaches' input and put together 32-team open state tournaments in both boys and girls basketball. Teams that lose in the first two rounds fall back into their respective conference tournaments. John Roberts is in his first year as head football coach at Mountain Point, which dropped from 6A to 5A for football this year. He supports the change, suggesting it should have been considered when the open included the 4A and 5A teams. He said, quote, a lot of teams, including last year's 5A teams like Marana and Desert Mountain, still would have been in contention to lift that gold football at the end of the season. 5A teams benefited from the top four being taken out of 5A, unquote. Now, back in 2021, Glendale Cactus and ALA Queen Creek both qualified for the 8-team open out of 4A, and both were bounced in the first round, and their seasons were over. Both coaches were left wondering what might have been had they stayed in the 4A playoffs. Casa Grande beat Poston Butte for that 4A crown that year. Eubanks said of the new open format, quote, I think everyone is pretty excited about it, unquote. Well, maybe not everyone. Some coaches in other conferences don't feel that it's fair that out of 29 6A teams, 20 got to have a postseason. Glendale Cactus coach Brian Bells, whose team reached the 5A final last year, said, quote, I think there are some inequities, unquote. Then he went on and said, 6A essentially gets two champions now, the open champ and the 6A champ, and there are only like 30 schools in that division. 5A and 4A schools each have around 50 schools, but only one crown per champion per division. I don't quite understand the logic, unquote. Well, playoff changes will be coming to other conferences. Since there are 49 teams in 5A and 59 teams in 4A and 57 teams in 2A, those three conferences will have expanded playoffs from 16 to 24 teams this season. The 3A conference, with 32 teams, will remain a 16-team playoff. Coach David Peter of Phoenix, Arizona Lutheran Academy, when asked about how 2A will work, quote, we don't want teams that finish in the top 16 bumped out by a region winner that was ranked worse. That happened last year, as Holbrook bumped Heritage. We came up with something different. Now, time will tell if it's a good thing. I don't see this really affecting the top teams, but the region crossover is unique for the automatic bids, and those games also count towards power ratings, unquote. So week 10 will feel like playoff games in 2A, with an open date for 2A to match the number 18, 23, and the 3s from each of the 10 regions in crossover games. It has been predetermined which regions will match up with each other, Peter said. Whoever wins among the top seeds in the final regular season game will earn the 5 automatic state playoff bids, and the rest of the field will make up 19 at-large bids based on AIA rankings, which is powered by Max Prep's computer ratings. Eubanks said the subsequent big discussion with the AIA will be whether there should be a minimum number of 6A schools competing in football. He believes 36 might be a good number. Coach Eubanks said, quote, "We'll see if there's any discussion on that, but I believe that is the next question that needs to be answered." And that was Richard Obert's article, 25 Season Brings Major Change to Playoff Format. Now, our next article is also kind of related to high school. Well, it is about high school football. But in the first article, Richard Obert alluded to there were a lot of transfers in the transfer portal for high school football. And this article is entitled The Republic's Top 20 Impact Transfers for 2025. It's a way of life in Arizona high school football. Transfers. Every year, there are too many to keep up with. They move between in-state schools, or they come from out-of-state, and they make an impact at their new schools. In-state transfers normally are required to sit out the first 5 games of the season under Interscholastic Association transfer rules. However, players can submit hardship appeals seeking to have that waived. On August 12th through the 13th, the AIA will conduct hardship appeal hearings to determine if those players can start the fall season right away. Now, hardships are generally approved if unforeseen circumstances can be proven that led to the transfer. There are 45 football hardship cases that the AIA will hear. The transfer rule applies to all sanctioned AIA sports, and the hardship appeals can be submitted for any of those sports. Transfers can have a significant impact on a team's season. Here is the Arizona Republic's list of the top 20 impact transfers for the 2025 season. Information was not immediately available on how many of these players have submitted appeals. Number 1, DeJohn Yarborough from Chandler Basha, outside linebacker. He's 6'5", 330 pounds, and a junior. With his recent move from Minnesota, Basha's offensive line went from okay to perhaps the best in Arizona. He joins junior Jake Hildebrand to form the state's most formidable bookend tackles and one of the best tackle duos in the nation. He is cleared to play right away because he's coming from out of state. His offers include Arizona State, Alabama, and Florida State. Coach Chris McDonald sees versatility in Yarborough, who can also play guard. Number 2, Mason Lewis, also with Basha. Cornerback, 6 foot, 197 pounds. He's a senior. The California commit will have to sit out the first 5 games due to his transfer from Queen Creek Castile. There was no appeal submitted to the AIA. Once October rolls around, he will make an instant impact. He is one of the most physical and athletic cornerbacks in the nation. Number 3, TJ Fulufuto from Peoria Liberty, linebacker and running back. 6 foot, 230 pounds, a senior. The Hawaii commit tore it up on the 2A level last year on both sides of the ball at Tonopah Valley. He likely will see most of the time on what could be the best defense in the state, making the defending Open Division champion Lions, a 6A team, even stronger since he will be eligible at midseason. And he's headed to Hawaii to play running back in college. Then, number 4, Khalil Bender from ALA Queen Creek, a wide receiver, defensive back, 6 foot, 180 pounds. He's a junior. Once he's eligible, this will change the whole dynamic of the Patriots offense and make senior quarterback Britt DeWitt that much more dangerous. Bender came from Tempe McClintock, where he had 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns receiving last season, when he also had 6 interceptions on defense for a 5A playoff team. Number 5 transfer, T. Smith Jr. from Castile, quarterback, 6'1", 180 pounds, he's a junior. The new Castile coach, Joe Bushman, saw right away how versatile this transfer from Chandler Hamilton was with his ability to move in the pocket and make throws on the run. He is a dynamic dual-threat quarterback who filed a hardship seeking AI clearance to play right away. He'll find out on August 13th when he will start his junior season. Number 6, Youngman Lee from Tolleson, quarterback, 6', 175 pounds, a senior. He moved from the Seattle area, and he will play right away. He is Minnesota-committed wide receiver Rico Blasingame, and the rising junior receiver Quentin Gavin might be the happiest guys on the team, because Youngman Lee passed for 2,900 yards and 41 touchdowns as a junior at Mercer Island High School. It should be fun to see Lee hooking up with those receivers in the August 28th opener against the rival Avondale Agua Fria. Number 7 is Julian Alakpavi from Phoenix Maryvale. Wide receiver, defensive back, 6', 180 pound, he's a senior. He is one of 5 impact transfers greeting the new coaches Marcus and Mark Carter, who 2 years ago they led Goodyear Desert Edge to the 5A final. This guy might be the most special of the group, coming from Phoenix Alhambra. He joins sophomore dual-threat quarterback Masan Alakpavi from Alhambra. They could form a dynamic duel for a program that is starving for wins. Number 8, Isaiah McIver from Gilbert Perry, a running back, 5'10", 200 pounds, a senior. Now, he is one of 3 transfers from Basha, along with cornerback Jordan Williams, the brother of arguably the greatest Basha player in its history, quarterback DeMond Williams Jr. Jordan has an offer from Washington, which is where DeMond plays. Coach Joseph Ortiz believes McIver will make an instant impact once he takes the field. Number 9, Mekhi Hodge, Phoenix Mountain Point, tight end or edge. 6'3", 213 pounds, he's a junior. He was a late summer transfer from Levine Cesar Chavez, where he was emerging as a top Arizona two-way player. He is a college prospect at tight end, but he can also change the game as an edge rusher on defense. Number 10, Jaheim Brown from Desert Ridge, wide receiver and running back, 5'8", 170 pounds. He's a sophomore. Brown started for Peoria Centennial last season as a freshman. He caught 30 passes for 383 yards and 4 TDs, and he ran for 132 yards on 15 carries. He transferred to Desert Ridge with his brother, Haj Brown, who also had an impact at receiver at Centennial as a freshman. Number 11 is Aiden Whitaker from McClintock, a wide receiver and a defensive back, 6'2", 180 pounds. He's a junior. He's one of the most talented two-way players in the state. He may not leave the field once he is eligible at McClintock. He has blossomed in football and basketball in his last 2 years at Scottsdale Saguaro. Number 12, Hudson Mitten in Mesa, quarterback, 5'11", 175. He's a senior. He led ALA West Foothills to a 13-1 record with 22 touchdown passes last season, playing for his father, Chad. Number 13 is Braylon Casper, ALA Queen Creek, wide receiver, 6'2", 185 pounds. He's a junior, a big target whose sophomore season at Gilbert Williams Field was cut short by an injury. Number 14th transfer, Carter Guggenberger from Peoria, defensive end. He is 6'4", 235 pounds. He's a senior. He had 9 tackles for losses, 3.5 sacks, and 7 quarterback hurries last season at Glendale Deer Valley. Number 15 is Joel Cooper from Surprise Shadow Ridge, running back, 5'10", 200 pounds. He's a junior. He is one of 10 transfers who could impact a team that went 2-8 last year. He came from Surprise Willow Canyon. He is a 5'10", 200-pound wrecking ball. Number 16, Nehemiah Armstrong, known as Neo, from ALA Ironwood, wide receiver, 5'10", 170 pounds. He's a sophomore. He was an all-region receiver as a freshman last season at Gilbert Santan Charter. He'll have to sit out half the season, but will start once he becomes eligible, and he will complement the 6-foot, 4-inch sophomore wide receiver Rylan Bradford. Number 17, Antonio Casillas from Phoenix Pinnacle, quarterback, 6'1", 185 pounds. He's a senior. He had a breakout junior season at Glendale Cactus, leading the Cobras to the 5A final with 3,001 yards and 29 touchdowns passing to go with his 375 rushing yards. The number 18th transfer, Luke Berlin from Cactus. He's a quarterback, 6'4", 190 pounds. He's a senior. He has already been cleared by the AIA to play right away after moving in from Lakeside Blue Ridge, where he started at quarterback. Number 19, Jackson Reeder from Pinnacle. He's a quarterback. He's 6'1", 175 pounds. He's a junior. He's got a chance to be special after leaving Phoenix Sandra Day O'Connor. He could wind up being QB1 if he's cleared this week by the AIA. And number 20, Kuvon Lewis from Pinnacle, wide receiver, 6'4", 180 pounds. He's a junior. Now, he's another transfer from Sandra Day O'Connor. He will probably have to sit the first 5 games, but once he's eligible, he will become a big play threat for the Pioneers. And that was the Republic's top 20 impact transfers for 2025. We just passed 32 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the viewpoint section and read some opinions. Our first opinion piece is written by Phil Boas, who is a columnist for the Arizona Republic, and it's entitled, "Some Call Her a Trump Whisperer. She is not that gentle." Here's what he wrote. "She is a scientist and engineer who trained at Stanford and Cal Berkeley. He is a Wheeler dealer who cut his teeth on Manhattan real estate. She is understated in speech and dress. He is New York loud in tongue and tie. She is a political creature of the left. He is a political creature of the right. She's the president of Mexico. He is the president of the United States. And let's be frank, he does not play well with others. That's not criticism. That's just observable fact. Just ask Little Marco, or Low Energy Jeb, or Gavin Newscom, or my favorite, George Slopodopoulos. She runs a country of 130 million people who all seem to hate his guts. Yes, Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum has tamed Donald Trump and his worst impulse. Some call her the Trump Whisperer, but she's not that gentle. When he blusters on about U.S. Special Forces breaching Mexican sovereignty or his beloved Gulf of America, she pulls the reins back hard. She oversees one of the largest economies in Latin America, with a GDP of $2 trillion. But her nation shares a 2,000-mile border with the most powerful economy in the history of the world, which boasts a GDP 15 times bigger. Well, that creates a power imbalance that demands its tributes from most U.S. trade partners. But Sheinbaum has developed a working relationship with Donald Trump that is unbowing and remarkably congenial. Trump has called her a wonderful woman and said their relationship very good. Together, they are working on some of the biggest challenges that face both of their nations. For the United States, they are bringing an end to a record-breaking era of mass illegal immigration and working to stem the flow of fentanyl, an illicit drug that in the year 2020 and 2021 killed some 127,000 Americans, or more than those killed in the Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam wars. For Mexico, the United States is helping confront its neighbors' criminal drug syndicates that have taken over roughly a third of Mexico. Trump's federal agents are also more aggressively cutting off the supply of U.S. guns to the cartels south of the border. Sheinbaum told Mexican media that she had asked Trump to crack down on gun smuggling, and he did. In Trump's first 4 months of his second term, the United States seized nearly 10,000 firearms illegally bound for Mexico and its murderous cartels, according to Mexico News Daily. Sheinbaum's young presidency has been plagued by violent crime. In the first week of her term, some 500 people were murdered, according to Newsweek. That amounted to roughly 81 people per day. Her predecessor and mentor, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, was plagued by some 170,000 homicides in the first 5 years of his term, according to America's Quarterly. That publication said, quote, "No other issue is more pressing for Mexicans than public security," unquote. So when Sheinbaum took over the office in October 24, she was expected to confront the violent crime epidemic. Now, as mayor of Mexico City, she had reduced homicides by half, according to the American Quarterly, through civilian policing, ramped up police investigations, closer cooperation with prosecutors, and shared intelligence with U.S. law enforcement. As president, Sheinbaum has the opportunity to break with López Obrador's bugs, not bullets policy that primarily tried to address social issues such as poverty that led to violent crime. And the America's Quarterly reported, quote, "She can take advantage of close collaboration with U.S. security forces to make targeted interventions more inter-cartel battles rage out of control." Sheinbaum signaled earlier that she would do that by hiring her Mexico City security chief, Omar Garcia Harfuch, to serve as the nation's security minister. On August 12th, the Mexican government announced it had transferred 26 accused cartel operatives to the United States who are, quote, "wanted for their links to criminal organizations for drug trafficking, among other crimes, and represented a permanent risk to public security," unquote. This follows on the heels of the February transfer of 29 cartel leaders. Quote, "Extraditions from Mexico to the United States have become relatively common," unquote, the New York Times reported. And then they went on and said, quote, "but rarely have so many taken place in such a short period of time," unquote. Managing Trump's mercurial nature is a trial for most world leaders, but Sheinbaum has managed so far to stave off crippling U.S. tariffs that have fallen hard on other nations. She is building a strong relationship with Trump, and while they have yet to meet in person, they speak regularly on the phone, according to Politico. She is not his handmaiden. According to Newsweek, who reported that he once told her, "You're tough." Sheinbaum knows that with Trump, you can never let your guard down. On August 8th, even as Mexico and the U.S. were cooperating on all of these matters, the New York Times reported that Trump had secretly ordered the Pentagon to use military force against Latin American cartels. Sheinbaum did not flinch. She said, quote, "The United States is not going to come to Mexico with the military. We cooperate, we collaborate, but there is not going to be an invasion," unquote. And that was Phil Boas's article, "Some Call Her a Trump Whisperer. She's Not That Gentle." Our next opinion piece is written by Joanna Allhands, also a columnist for the Arizona Republic. "Phoenix can take lesson from Tucson's rejected data center." Here's what she wrote. "Years from now, I suspect the Tucson City Council will regret axing Project Blue outright. But I get why they did it. It would have been nearly impossible for the council to have annexed land for a massive data center campus, which was widely reported to have Amazon Web Services as a prospective client. Not after 1,000 people showed up at a town hall to scream obscenities about its proposed water use. This is how it goes today. Once enough people are riled up, asking folks to consider the other side of an argument is simply wasting your breath. In fact, I'm not sure that Project Blue's water use was the crux of the issue here, even if that was the part over which the city of Tucson had the most direct say, and therefore was the part that received so much ire from residents during those increasingly raucous town halls. Consider the proposal. The developers had planned to use potable water for the first 2 years while they expanded the city's reclaimed water system to serve the project and potentially others who might want to connect to the system at their own cost. The project was expected to use no more than 440 acre-feet per year. That's less than 0.5% of the potable water that Tucson delivers to taps. And the developers had agreed to replenish every drop. Then, once the campus was fully built and connected to Tucson's reclaimed water system, it was estimated to use 1,910 acre-feet, or about 6% of the city's reclaimed water supply each year. And again, the developers had agreed to replenish every drop. A draft development agreement flushed out how that might look. The developers could find their own renewable water source to supplement Tucson's water supplies, which heavily rely on the dwindling Colorado River. Or they could pay Tucson to acquire water for them, which could then be used to bolster riparian projects. Or they could fuel direct potable reuse, which would recycle water to drinking quality standards. Or they could put toward any of the goals in Tucson's One Water 2100 Master Plan, among other efforts. Well, I'd call that a pretty good deal. No data center developer in Metro Phoenix has proposed anything quite so extensive. And that's a shame, because cities here should be following a similar approach. But with the proposal now rejected and the project's future uncertain, the chances are slim to replicate anything like it in Metro Phoenix. I share residents' concern about data centers. I wouldn't want one in my neighborhood. They're big and hot, and even if the water that's used for cooling would be replenished, there's no getting around the fact that they use a lot of power. The way the project came to light, with some key details hidden behind non-disclosure agreements that county and city negotiators had signed, well, that did it no favor. When you lose the trust of an already skeptical public, you are sunk. But I also get the argument that we need this infrastructure to support a rapidly changing tech economy, to power things like artificial intelligence and cloud-based computing and the virtual meetings that many of us log on to daily. And if data centers are a necessary evil, then we should do our best to keep them away from homes and to ensure they pay their own way, particularly in the water they use to cool their massive servers. Now, Project Blue was bigger than the average data center in Phoenix, but it also promised more jobs on average than what similar projects have produced here. It also was projected to generate more sales and property tax for Tucson than a sales tax increase that voters resoundingly rejected in March. There has long been talk among the residents about slowing growth and maintaining Tucson's character, even if the city has been underperforming economically for a decade, despite being home to a research university and an Air Force base and an established defense manufacturer. Far be it from me to tell them what to do. The city certainly has the right to reject any development that it doesn't like. But I'm hope that Metro Phoenix does not take a page from that playbook. Instead of rejecting data centers outright, it's better to steer them to parcels where they won't bother residents and double down on efforts to make them pay their way. And that was Joanna Allhand's opinion piece, Phoenix Can Take Lesson from Tucson's Rejected Data Center. Well, we're at 45 minutes past the hour. We're going to move on over to the entertainment section now. We're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. So let's begin with the sign of Aries. Birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Boldly express your creativity. Take a risk and pitch what is on your mind. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th. Put in the effort to manage your resources. Gather data to strategize your next financial moves. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st. Use creativity to get your point across. Engage with intellect. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd. Matters of home and security stir up your subconscious terrain. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd. You are in demand today. Prepare to be on the go. Your social life buzzes with action. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, be strategic about what you say. Excess talk could expose secrets. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, group spaces are full of inspiring ideas today. Intellectual passion is in the air. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, strategize your goals behind the scenes today. You are in investigation mode. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, do not spend the day alone. Find a social event that you would not normally attend and see who you meet. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, collaborative planning gets you to your goals. Are you ready to brainstorm as a team? Then get to work. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, let us get this party started. Go out and play. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Reorganizing your space can enhance mental clarity. Get creative with your decor. And those were today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, I'm a 67-year-old man who has two sisters. Recently, I was at my younger sister Mitzi's house installing some blinds. While there, I received a phone call from my girlfriend. We have been together 9 months after my wife passed last year. My girlfriend and I were discussing finances, including the topic of my older sister, Carolyn, borrowing money last year. A few days later, Carolyn called me, upset that I had discussed our financial arrangement with my girlfriend. It turns out Mitzi had recorded the conversation with her Ring cameras while I was there alone. Now, both sisters are mad at me. This all started when I told Mitzi that associating with her ex-husband, who verbally and physically abused her years earlier, was a mistake. He was arrested for domestic violence and incarcerated for a while for committing other crimes. Mitzi did not have my permission to share that recording that I had no knowledge of. She was not a participant in the conversation. And now my girlfriend is concerned because she was looking forward to building a good relationship with my sisters, and now does not think that Carolyn will let her. Any advice? Signed, Dramafield in New York. And Abby responds, Dear Dramafield, just this. Remember, none of this would have happened if you hadn't done a favor for Sister Mitzi by installing her blinds. Unless you were sworn to secrecy, there's no reason you should not have discussed the loan you made to Sister Carolyn with your girlfriend. If they continue giving you a hard time, warn them that if they don't both apologize for breaching your privacy, you're done being their handyman and moneylender. You should also make clear that at a minimum, you expect them to treat your girlfriend with respect. The next letter goes, Dear Abby, I am acquainted with a single mother of a 4-year-old daughter. The mother is depressed and suffers from a circadian rhythm disorder. They don't go to bed until 4 to 6 in the morning, and they sleep until 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Because of their sleep schedule, there is no daytime activities for the child. During the winter, the little girl saw only an hour or two of sunlight each day. The mother does not want her daughter to attend preschool because of their sleep schedule. This will have a detrimental effect on her daughter. Her circadian rhythm will be out of sync when she does go to school. Is this considered neglect? The father is a friend of mine, and he agrees there is a problem. Can you offer suggestions? Signed, Bystander in Ohio. And Abby responds, Dear Bystander, yes, this is considered neglect. That child has received none of the social or intellectual stimulation that children normally do. The father needs to step in, assert himself, and if it's possible, rally the grandparents for help. There is medical help for both circadian rhythm disorder and depression, and the mother should be urged to give it a try, if not for her own sake, then for her daughter's. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. You can reach Abigail in two different ways. You can go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter, and you can mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. Now it's time for some comics. In this first comic strip, it's called Luann, and it was drawn by Greg Evans. And Luann is taking a walk with her, I think it's her niece, and the niece is holding the dog on a leash. The dog's name is Puddles, and looks like Puddles is really rushing ahead of him. And the little girl goes, Puddles, no, don't pull. And the next frame, she yells, Stop pulling, Puddles, sit, sit. And the last frame, she says, the little girl says, I thought dogs have good hearing. And Luann says, Only when they're in the living room and you drop a curd of cottage cheese on the kitchen floor. And that was Luann. And in the comic strip Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, in the first frame, Dagwood's sitting at his desk in his office, and Mr. Dithers comes in and says, Bumstead, you're fired. This report is a total disaster. And Dagwood says, Well, boss, you fired me yesterday when I handed it in. In the next frame, Mr. Dithers stops and says, I did? Well, so what are you doing here today? And Dagwood says, Well, I had a feeling that you'd change your mind and rehire me. In the next frame, Mr. Dithers jumps up and down and says, Why would I do a dumb thing like that? And Dagwood says, Because if you ever fired me for a real reason, you would have to find another office manager. You'd have to waste a lot of time interviewing a long line of applicants and hope for the best. And in the end, you would probably be right back at square one anyway, boss. In the last frame, Mr. Dithers is just walking in the door at his home, and his wife says, How was your day, Julius? And he goes, Right back at square one. And that was Blondie. And in the comic strip Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, in the first frame, there's Pickles sitting on the couch with the dog, and Earl comes in, he's got an apron on, and he says, Guess what? And she goes, What? And he leans over the back of the sofa, and he says, I just emptied the dishwasher. And she says, What, you did? He says, Yep, all the plates, bowls, cups, glasses, everything. Even the pots and pans, the silverware, the saucepan, that little thingy with the wires on the end. And then she says, Oh, that's great. Thanks a lot, Earl. In the last frame, she says to the dog, Now, it'll probably take me a month to figure out where he put everything. And that was Pickles. And in the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Berkman and Jerry Scott, and there's only two frames. And the first frame, the dad is fishing. He's sitting in a boat out in the lake, and he's got his sunglasses on and a little pith helmet covering his head. And he's got a fishing rod, and he's got all three of his kids in the fishing boat with him, and they've all got little fishing rods. And all around him in that frame are these clouds of conversation. What's the point of all this? Is that a storm cloud? Is it always this boring? Where is the bathroom? Do worms ever get revenge on the fish? Did Wren just eat that bug? When's lunch? Why are my shoes wet? Is there a mosquito bite on, or is that a mosquito bite or a booger? Are we sinking? Do I have donut crumbs in my hair? What happens to the fish after we catch him? What time is it now? Can I sit on the front seat on the way back? Why didn't Mom want to come? Did somebody just toot? Do dogs get headaches? Are we done yet? And in the last frame, Dad's now at home, sitting in this chair. He's got his hand on his forehead, and Mom says, "How was the fishing trip?" And Dad says, "I'll just say, curious." And that was Baby Blues. Well, before we go, let's wish happy birthday to some celebrities today. Robert De Niro turns 82 today, and business executive Larry Ellison turns 81. The singer Belinda Carlisle with the Go-Go's, well, she turns 67 today. Actor Sean Penn turns 65, and singer David Hollister with the Blackstreet turns 57. And singer and songwriter Phoebe Bridgers turns 31 today. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, August 17th, 2025. Have a great day. Bye-bye.